Joining me now is Bill Ardolino of, and check this website, thelongwarjournal.org. Thelongwarjournal.org, embed in Iraq, has some local knowledge for us. Welcome to the show, Billy.
Thanks for having me.
Where are you at right now, my friend?
I am in Washington, D.C.
Why aren't you someplace where you really unwind? Why do you go to a place that's more rancorous than Solder City?
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me what's, we've got some recent good news. The country's not hearing it by and large, but even the Washington Post, if you're there, you might have picked it up over the weekend, is coming out and saying, hey, where's the reporting on the good news? Tell us about some of the turns recently.
When I was over there in Baghdad, right at the height or the end of the recent fighting that went on in Solder City.
Right. Well.
And basically, you know, it was a challenge that started in Basra when Maliki decided to take on the Mahdi militia in Basra, and then the fighting between the Mahdi militia and the Iraqi government to Baghdad. And, you know, over several weeks, they killed like 1,000 of these guys. Well, the estimates range between 500 and 1,000 Mahdi army fighters. And then basically they cried uncle, and they let the Iraqi army into Solder City, and the Iraqi army took over Basra. So the good news is that really the final, what I like to call the final hurdle in Iraq's stability, which is the dealing with the militias, has kind of gotten underway rather successfully.
Now, when they cry uncle in Iraqi, is the word actually uncle still, or is it?
No, what? I'm not really sure.
All right. Just thought I'd try to get some of the local color there. Now, when I used to hear about the Iraqi army, I would always somewhere in the back of my mind hear the soundtrack from a Max Sennett sort of silent film, you know. But I saw some footage of them lately kicking butt and taking hyphenated names, and they're starting to tighten up over there, aren't they?
Definitely. I mean, there's variability in the Iraqi army, but, you know, the picture that you get from most of the mainstream reports are, you know, like you just said, there's a Benny Hill soundtrack playing in the background, when in reality there are some Iraqi army units that are just exceptional. There are others that, you know, stink. But, and logistically, overall, the Iraqi army still has problems. They depend on us for, you know, supplies or intelligence or things like that. But they have definitely improved in quality, and there are some units that were operating in Solder City that performed very, very well.
And now, Bill, people think, and we're talking to Bill Ardolino. Once again, the website is thelongwarjournal.org. I'm putting the on the front of it. Is it longwarjournal.org or the
longwarjournal.org? We'll get you there.
Yes. Okay, longwarjournal.org. And, Bill, this is like not your day job. Explain to me how you what drew you to it, like Richard Dreyfuss to the plateau where the aliens landed. What about Iraq made you want to go over and tell the real story?
Well, I've been blogging and writing since 2004, and I blogged and wrote a lot about the war. And basically, you know, essentially, I just became very dissatisfied with the mainstream media coverage of Iraq. So, and at a certain point, when you start writing about this topic enough, you really have to go over there and experience it to, you know, take it to the next level. So I became an independent embed in Iraq to figure out what was exactly going on.
What's your day-to-day with the people there? How do you find the Iraqi people? They're almost like, I don't know. They seem like a myth to me in a way. I don't quite know them. You hear about, I see these smiling faces and these kids with them, and then you hear at night certain guys turn and go to the other side and blow our boys up. What's your take on them? What's the cut of their jib?
That's a complex question. I mean, like in any society, there's a great variety of people, but I would say if I had to boil it down to the simplest equation possible, I would say, you know, 80% of the Iraqi people, or whatever large majority of them, really just want to be left alone, do their own thing. And then you've got, you know, this smaller group of extremists, whether they're, you know, the Sunni nationalists who were fighting originally in the war, or the Sunni radical extremists, or the Shia militia extremists, who basically are just making life miserable for everybody.
Right.
And so the largest part of the population, you know, will just kind of wait it out and see which strong horse they're going to fall in line behind. And, you know, thankfully right now, the Iraqi army and the U.S. military are proving themselves out to be the strong horses.
Yeah, when Bin Laden isolated us post Mogadishu as the weak horse, we certainly had to reaccrue our street cred in that part of the world. And by mere act of staying, we are reacquiring it, right?
Well, the surge, I mean, beyond the additional troops, beyond the change in tactics, which was the most important thing, the surge also sort of telegraphed a message to the Iraqi government, the Iraqi people, the Iraqi security forces that, hey, you know, we've got your back and we're in it to win it.
Mm-hmm.
So it really did have an impact, sort of an atmospherics as far as that goes.
Petraeus has said he will not leave till the last superdelegate is counted, as a matter of fact. He's indefatigable. Listen, we recently talked to Michael Yon about the quote-unquote Shia awakening in Iraq. Tell us about the group, say, for instance, like the Sons of Iraq. Explain who they are, what they're doing. How's it working?
The Sons of Iraq is the general name for all of the neighborhood watch groups that have sprouted up all around Iraq that have variously been known as awakening councils. Or awakening councils are really a very specific political term that's kind of misused a lot. But awakening councils concern local citizens, and now they're called the Sons of Iraq. And they're all the neighborhood watches. And as far as a Shia awakening goes, I went on patrol and interviewed this one Sons of Iraq group that operates in central Baghdad, which is the southern Russafa district, which is where all those huge markets are. I mean, if you were reading the Washington Post every day during 2006 when you'd see another horrific bombing,
mm-hmm.
you know,
it was in
dozens,
that marketplace.
Dozens of people, that's where it was all going down. And these neighborhoods in central Baghdad were like armed camps where Sunni extremists led by al-Qaeda were bombing civilians, and then Shiite militia extremists were running death squads into Sunni neighborhoods and, you know, massacring people. And so most of the Iraqis in central Baghdad really don't care so much about Sunni and Shia identity, but they had to at that point.
Right.
They were basically at the point of a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the wonderful things that happened is a Sunni Sons of Iraq organization formed in central Baghdad, and then a Shia Sons of Iraq organization formed in central Baghdad, and one kicked out al-Qaeda, and one is kicking out the Mahdi army right now, and is largely responsible for this improvement in security in central Baghdad.
Well, maybe we can have and the ultimate hands across the water, which we're all hoping for. I used to be in a barbershop quartet called the Sons of Iraq. And very infrequently did we finish an entire song, as there was often incoming before we made it to the bridge. But it's nice to know that songs will be played out to their conclusion in the future. Bill Ardolino, we appreciate your perspective from the ground over there. When are you going back, my friend?
Not anytime soon. I'm going to take a break. I spent the last 2 months of the past year and a half in Iraq, and I'm all about the indoor plumbing and the air conditioning for a couple months.
And the ladies. Getting your freak on in D.C. at the ladies at the Fairfax, Virginia discos. All right, Billy Ardolino, we'll chat at you down the road, my friend. Thanks for the heads up. This is the Dennis Miller Show.